Up there we have one of the more recent photos of Martin Luther. I was sort of tempted to put up four incredibly different images of Martin Luther and say, well, which one do you like? If you'll be a bit of a hunt round on the internet, you find all sorts of images of Martin Luther. It's probably more complimentary than some, but it's a reasonably well-known one, and so I've just stuck them up there anyway. Because we're going to be looking at the life and times of Martin Luther over the course of the week, and in some ways it's a bit of an apology for those who are only here today, I want to spend most of this morning sort of looking at the background that gave rise to not just Martin, but also the wider movement of the Reformation, and look at perhaps his early childhood. We'll get to the point where he's in the monastery, roughly, I think. We'll see how time goes. But that's what we're going to do. So in terms of background, okay, that works. Right, the Holy Roman Empire. So cheer up, everyone. We get some history lessons. Yes. It was said later that it was in fact neither holy nor Roman nor an empire. However, this is around about the time of Martin Luther, about 1500. That's the Holy Roman Empire that's in colour. And so you see Spain, which is in a darker colour, and then the area of Germany and reaching down south of there in a more yellowy colour. Don't worry too much about that, it's just different lines and relatives and names of chunks. But put it all together, and this is the Holy Roman Empire. And so the person who rules that is pretty powerful, right? I mean, when you look at it, that's a good chunk of Europe. So who's the guy in the middle? The King of France. But he is also a very powerful ruler. And when you look at the Holy Roman Empire, you see it's a little bit bitsy. And that's a clue to the fact that he might not be as powerful as it looks. So as well as the King of France in the middle and the Holy Roman Emperor around about, you also have a third great political power in Europe at that time. And that great power, political power, is... Sorry? The Church. Oh, the Turks. Yeah, actually the Turks are on the edge of that, and they're very powerful. Yeah, but the one I'm thinking of, this great political power in Europe, is the Pope. Yeah, he's a political power. And so there's a constant power struggle going on, which kind of revolves around France, the Holy Roman Emperor, and the Pope, and a whole bunch of other smaller players, and they're all playing one off against the other. And so there's a lot of money changing hands, there's bribes, there's assassinations, there's all sorts of alliances being made. Traditionally, England was at war with France, and so they made allies with Spain, and therefore France made allies with... If you're at war with England, who would you make an ally with? Now, England. Scotland. Obviously. You see, the guys on the other side of the border, to the north. So the old alliance was between France and Scotland. Now, if we have a look at what Germany was like, that's a political map of Germany at the time. And you just see how many different bits and pieces are there. You know, there's principalities, there's kingdoms, there's margraves, there's landgraves, there's, I don't even know half the names of the different sorts of rulers that had their little chunk of what we now think about as Germany. But it was incredibly broken up. And even within those colours up there, there might be two or three families that would be struggling to be top dog in that particular little place. So when we're thinking of Martin Luther, he's growing up in a Europe where you've got the big powers having their big struggle, but inside of that, you have all these little struggles going on. Everything is incredibly fragmented. Not only is it fragmented in terms of boundaries, which keep shifting, but there's a map of German dialects. So in terms of the language that people were speaking, that's different from east to west and north to south. So I just want you to get it in your heads that the environment, the climate in which Martin Luther is growing up is one where there's an incredible amount of diversity, fragmentation, conflict, but large scale conflict on the small scale, upsets everywhere. Okay? This is the situation into which Martin Luther is born. So we'll put the piggies to one side for a little bit and we'll start to talk about Martin. Martin was born of peasant stock, and interestingly he often refers to the fact that he came from peasant stock, although his father was engaged in mining. So why he didn't say he came from mining stock, I don't know, but peasant stock was what he continually referred to. The name Luther probably came from a Christian name, Lothar, and was often spelt Luther, and only later on we find that Martin was referred to as Martin Luther. He was born in 1483. His mother said she could never be quite sure of the year, although she did remember the day and the hour. Maybe mums can identify with that. He was born, we think, sometimes legend and rumour and fact get a wee bit mixed up, on St. Martin's Eve, November the 10th, 1483. And the next day, his parents took him off and he was baptised, and because it was St. Martin's Eve when he was born, he got to be called Martin. And so that's how Martin comes about. Now, his father Hans was really a hard man. I mean, hard as in harsh. And maybe Martin was a wee bit biased when he was writing his memoirs, but when he looked back to his childhood, it wasn't particularly happy, and he certainly recalled the discipline that he received in that family setting. It wasn't just that he got chastised, but he got regularly and thoroughly thrashed. And that made, in more ways than one, an impression on young Martin. His mother, how cheerful was she? I don't know. She used to go around humming or singing a little song to the effect of, you know, if no one loves us, then that's, you know, we can only blame ourselves. Which isn't kind of a very cheerful thing to go around singing in the house, is it? And she worked pretty hard. She carried firewood on her back. And these are the sort of recollections that Martin has of growing up as a child. You know, the harshness, the hardness, the thrashings, the poverty that he lived in, just hard times all around. And yet his father was respected by his workmates. They elected him to be their representative, the one who would stand in their place to talk to the council of the town and that kind of thing. Excuse me. They moved around a little bit. Depending on which book you read, this is where it gets really confusing, you read that the tradition amongst the Thuringian peasants was that the eldest son inherited the land and the others had to go off somewhere else. And then you read another book and it says amongst the Thuringians, the youngest inherited the land and the others had to go off. Well, Martin was neither oldest nor youngest, so he had to go off. Hans had to go off. And that's where he went into the mining trade. Is it really that time? It is that time. Okay. School. School was no improvement in terms of Martin's enjoyment of life. He went off to school and he records that one morning the schoolmaster birched him 15 times in one morning. That's got to be fairly rough. Now, Martin Luther perhaps was a real problem child to have in the school, you know, maybe. But 15 times is probably excessive, I think. He thought so. And he was pretty miserable at school, constantly getting thrashed. Now, what do you learn when you go to school these days, off to primary school? Well, kids aren't here, so I can't really ask them, can I? Do the parents know what they get taught? Now, that could be a revealing. Yeah. What do your children get taught at primary school?
How to use iPads.
How to use iPads. Okay, I can assure you Martin didn't get to use an iPad. That's right. Any other ideas? Oh, come on.
I don't reckon they should be taught how to read and write.
How to read and write. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This has escaped the notice of some. And the teachers are starting to go like this in their seats. What Martin learnt was Latin. That's why you go to school. You go to school to learn Latin. Why do you go to school to learn Latin? Because it's such a wonderful language. Well, the reason you go to school to learn Latin is so that you can get on in life. And Hans Luther had in mind for his son, he recognised that he was fairly bright, that he'd get a good education, he'd learn his Latin, and then he would go on, and maybe one day he would become a lawyer. And for a family like the Luthers, that was their opportunity to really move up a big step in society and to gain access to people who had both power and money and influence. So Hans Luther, while he was, you know, this really harsh, hard-working coal miner, he could read and he had books, and not many people had books. So he was a man who had ambition for his son Martin. Sent him off to school where he learned his Latin and was unhappy, and then went to another school in Magdeburg. Is Beatrice here? Because I'm probably pronouncing all these names wrong. Yeah, you can just tell me when I get the words wrong, Beatrice. And he was a bit happier at that school, but he was poor. And when I say poor, what they did at school was they would go out in the evenings around the town to sing for their supper. Like, literally, if they didn't sing at the right doors, or if they didn't sing well enough, they went back hungry. So Martin knew what it was like to grow up begging for food so that he could go to bed with a meal in his stomach. Not just once, but on a fairly regular kind of a basis. From there, he moved on to Eisenach, where actually the family had earlier started from, for some more schooling, but then he was heading off to the university at Erfurt. Now that was really quite an upmarket place. It was a university of some significance in the town. It was 1501 when he headed off there. And we might think, Erfurt, never heard of it. You know, is it just a little town somewhere? But no, it was a place of some significance. And the university there had some scholars, and they were kind of teaching the new way of learning. New way of learning and the new philosophies, the new ideas that were there. They hooked into, we'll just talk about it briefly, an idea called nominalism. Actually, has anybody heard of nominalism or realism? Or am I just one or two? Okay. Realism says that when you speak about something and you give it a name, that's something real. And the nominalist says, no, it's just a name. It could be any name. It means absolutely nothing at all. The universe is just a bunch of disconnected bits. And it's just in our heads that we try and say they belong to categories. The realist says, no, there really is connection between things, and these categories are how we express it. Anyway, the nominalists were the up-and-coming philosophers of the day. Nothing's connected. Everything is in little bits. And it actually led to quite a bit of scepticism. It led to a view of God who was an arbitrary God, who would just make decisions here, there, everywhere, but nothing's really connected. Just, God says or God wills, and there it is. So that was kind of the climate that Martin was being educated in at the university. And yet the lifestyle of the students was really old school monastic, like being back at school. They had a dress code they had to adhere to, and they sort of had bells and routines, and everything was quite tightly controlled, which didn't stop them when they headed off into town from going to the pub and getting drunk and having fights. And it's a bit like going back to Lincoln. Gosh, it's been recorded, isn't it? So that was student life for Martin. And it turned out that Martin was really quite bright. And so by the time it got to graduation, Martin graduated second from the top of his class. He'd done really well. And his father, recognising this, thought, wow, young Martin's doing very well for himself and this bodes well for the future. And he started referring to him in a more respectful way. Now, Beatrice, you might have to help me out here. Ear and do. When you're talking to someone, or maybe this is old German, you say ear or do for someone that's respected, someone that's just ordinary, I-H-R-E.
Herr.
No, this is I-H-R-E.
No,
here, okay. Right, see, I get it all wrong. Anyway, but he started speaking to his son now in this very respectful way, because Martin was on the brink of breaking through to becoming a lawyer, and the whole family was going to be all good. All good. However, during his time at university and just coming to the end of that, Martin had a few upsets in life. One stage he got really ill to the point where he and the other people thought he was dying, and that kind of focuses attention a little bit. He was quite melancholy. He was conscious of the fact that he was a sinner. And then a little while after, a friend of his, I think a reasonably close friend, was killed, and that again really kind of got to Martin, and he wasn't too good about that. And then the third thing that really tipped the balance was on his way journeying across the mountainside, he got caught in a storm. How many people know the story? Just so, only a few people. Okay, Martin was going across the countryside, gets caught in the storm, the thunder, the lightning, and one of the lightning bolts comes really, really close. Martin is scared witless, throws himself on the ground, save me, St. Anne, he says, I'll become a monk! Because you need to do something. And he didn't get hit by any lightning bolts, so he carried on his way home. But he had said that if he was saved, he would become a monk. So what did he have to do? Become a monk. You can't go back on something like that. You have to follow through. So he said, I'm going to become a monk. Dad was not happy. I mean, here was young Martin, all set up to be the lawyer, you know, elevate the family, safe security, looking forward to the future, all's going to be well, someone to look after mum and dad in their old age. He said to Martin, "Don't you remember the fourth commandment? To honour your father and mother?" But Martin had promised, and so he was going to become a monk. And off he went to the Augustinian monastery and entered there. Now, there are a whole bunch of different orders of monks. In the earlier times of the church, monks often tended to be hermits, and they figured that the world was a nasty place and a dangerous place and was full of temptations, and the way to escape temptations is to head off into the wilderness where there's no wine, where there's no women, where there's no anything that might tempt you to sin. And when you read their writings, you find out they got plagued with other sins, like pride or whatever it might be. However, in the 13th century, a lot of these hermits, maybe living on their own or just two or three here or there, gathered together into orders. And so you had Franciscans, and you had Dominicans, you had Carmelites, you had Augustinians, and so on. Now, Franciscans, obviously they come back to Saint Francis. That's right, the guy with birds on the shoulder, and so on. And amongst the Franciscans, there was kind of a, hey, creation is good sort of approach to life. The Dominicans, they weren't such a cheerful bunch. They were formed to be an order of preachers, and their specialty was rooting out heresy. They really got a kick along when St. Dominic went off to help wage a crusade against the Albigenses in the south of France. And they were a bunch of funny, Gnostic-y... I mean, they were out there. They were bad guys in terms of their theology. But the church's response to them, which was basically, kill and burn as a way of dealing with the heresy, was a bit over the top, really. However, the Dominicans kind of had their roots in that sort of background, and... who's heard of Torquemada? Torquemada, the Grand Inquisitor from the Inquisition. Nasty chap. He was a Dominican. And the Dominicans supplied a lot of the guys who operated the Inquisition. The name Dominican, if you kind of play with it a little bit in the Latin, Domine Canis, God's bloodhounds, or the Lord's dogs. That was kind of a nickname that they went by. The Augustinians, like the Dominicans, wore a black habit, so they were called black friars, as the Dominicans were, but they had kind of a little bit of a different angle on life. They weren't the heresy hunters the way the Dominicans were. The Grey Friars, that was the Franciscans, and the Carmelites were the White Friars, so if you come across these terms. Yes, you've nearly got time for this. I've got to tell you this little story about a guy who went into a monastery, and he chose one of the stricter ones around where there was no talking. No talking, okay? Well, not totally. After 2 years, you're allowed 2 words. Right? So it wasn't absolute silence forever. So after 2 years, the abbot calls him in and says, "How's it going?" And the guy looks at him and says, "Hard bed." And it raises his eyebrows a wee bit and goes, okay, you're dismissed, and off he goes. 2 more years go by. "Well, how's life?" "Cold food." "Very well, you're dismissed." Off he goes again. Comes back 2 years later. "Well, I quit." "Well," says the abbot, "it's probably for the best. You've done nothing but complain since you got here." So life in the monastery was strict. And when Martin Luther entered into the Augustinian monastery, he entered to be a recluse. Basically, he went in, the door shut behind him, and he was living like a hermit within the walls of the monastery. He made the promise, he was keeping the promise, and as he spent life there, he became more and more conscious of the fact that he was a sinner. And it really got to him. Really got to him. They had their confessors appointed. Martin had a confessor by the name of Staupitz, and he would go to his father confessor, and sometimes he would spend literally hours confessing his sins. To the point where Staupitz started to get a bit brassed off. Martin! You know, other people would come and say, oh, I've sinned, I've done this, I've done that, you know, I was thinking that, and I was, you know, I said this and that, and well, you shouldn't have done those things, you know. But it was kind of done and dusted in 10 minutes. But Martin was serious about this. He had huge lists of sins. The tiniest, tiniest little deviation on anything whatsoever, that had to be really dissected, gone over, and confessed. Because Martin did have an awareness that God is really holy. And God is really righteous and just and perfect and doesn't miss a thing anywhere, anytime, always. And Martin knew that he was sinning all the time. And where did that leave him? So he would confess his sins again and again to Staupitz. I'm going to stop there, because this is a good place to leave you, I think. Now I'm going to ask for some questions on what we've looked at so far. Has anybody got any questions or maybe any comments to throw in? No, surely someone's got a question. No? I don't know at what stage he would have attended Mass, actually. I'm not sure. He certainly would have, like, had been going to Mass, you know, before he got to this point. But at what age, I'm not quite sure. Yeah, yeah. Beatrice. Sorry? He grew up in a just basically a standard Roman Catholic home. His home background was just the standard Roman Catholic background that you would have found at that time in Europe and in Germany. Yep. It was embarrassing. I was expecting people would want to know all sorts of things about it. Yep.
I'm just thinking, listening to Sproul talking about this, and he said, I'm just wondering if you agree at the point you brought us to, the conviction of sin was so strong in him that he was said to have said, do I love God? Sometimes I hate him. Because the stable's up there, and I'm here, and I can't attain it.
Yeah.
But do you think he said, I hate God?
I don't know whether he used those exact words, and he may very well have, because he was given to, you know, saying things, yeah, explosive and kind of exaggerated things, perhaps sometimes too. His language was coarse. You know, if you read stuff that he wrote, you might go, whew, some of the language is pretty rough. Pretty rough. But whether he actually used the words, I hate God, I don't know. But certainly, he wasn't looking on God with any great love, in the sense that God had put him in this awful predicament and he couldn't escape. You know, all he could ever see was this horror of judgment, because he knew what he was. And he knew what God was, or at least this aspect of God. Yeah, very true.
How far did he actually continue on after school into his legal studies?
Never really got there.
He never actually went to university.
Well, you see, he went to university, but when he went to university, he started off the classical education, where you had the trivium and the quadrivium, so you did your grammar and your rhetoric and your logic, and then you added to that arithmetic and geometry, music and astronomy. And so those seven subjects, they were the classic university education. And once you had studied that and you graduated from that, then you went on and you did your legal studies or whatever. Yeah. And so poor old Hans had forked out all the money, no student loans. Hans had forked out all the money and he'd, you know, paid for this education, and there he was about to get into the real stuff, and he goes and becomes a monk.
The reason I ask the question is that a person's education, what they learn, how they learn, is very significant in terms of how they actually develop as adults, human beings, and the way they interact with the world. So I'll go ask another question. Given the fact that he came from a Roman Catholic background, where do you think he got his awareness of what sin was, and that he was such a bad person?
I think in Roman Catholicism, there is significant teaching about the sinfulness of people. Now, how that's dealt with is an issue, and we will look at that tomorrow morning. But certainly, you know, there was teaching about the sinfulness of people.
Was education Greek-based or some other? A good
chunk of it, certainly the trivium, went back to Aristotle. Yeah, so Aristotle was, you know, the big guy, really, kind of, and then mediated through Aquinas to them. Yeah, so in that essence, it was kind of some, yeah, Greek-based education. Yep. Yeah. Ross?
Perhaps you could share with us how much of the scripture was he getting exposed to at home, school and university?
He didn't come across, I don't think he came across the whole Bible until he got to university. Because you didn't have, I mean, people didn't have Bibles at home. A lot of people couldn't read, but even those who could read, you know, Bibles were not just there to have, to read. And in church, it wasn't as if the Bible was kind of read through or preached through. What you had service books, and they had parts of the Bible. And so you could live all your life growing up in the church at that time, and you could have heard chunks of the Bible, but there would be other big chunks of the Bible you would be totally unaware that they existed. You would have no idea. And so when Martin, you know, did get his hands on the Bible and he started to read through it, he was finding all this stuff that he'd never heard of before, didn't know about. And there, it was actually there in the Bible. But, you know, but they just had these snippets. you know, there'll be something from the Gospels and something from the Epistles and something from the Psalms, but not a Bible. People didn't have access to a Bible. Yeah.
Liturgy.
Yeah, it was just what they got from the liturgy. Yeah.
Would the Bible for those people have always been in Latin?
Yes, well, there's no point in having anything else, is it?
And, but could the ordinary person... Did the ordinary person speak Latin?
No.
So it was still like a higher language than the ordinary people, was it?
Yeah, if you were educated, you would be educated so you could speak Latin. And the books you read would be books that were in Latin. If you were trying to advance yourself.
If you're a simple farmer like myself and went to church, you would hear the Bible only in Latin, and if I didn't know Latin, it would be any wiser.
Well, it didn't really matter. All you had to do was go to church and watch the priest and listen to the priest as he did his thing at the front and take the sacraments. And so long as you did that, you're okay. So don't bother your head about all this other stuff. It just gets complicated. For those who don't know me, I sometimes say things to make a point, not because I believe them, just in case anybody is getting worried at this point. Tracy. Yeah, you didn't have to understand. You just had to know that the church knew what was good and what was right and contained the answer to the salvation of your soul. And so you just kind of listened and you did what the priest said and went home. And, you know, you might recite prayers and...
So not all of it was in Latin, just the...
Yeah, there would have been stuff in German as well. Yep. Yep. Yeah, other thoughts? That's really what we open up with tomorrow, is Martin moving from this. Maybe I've been a wee bit mean to leave you with that, but I wanted you to really grasp the sense of what it was like for someone in Martin's situation and those who were around him, to really get a no, he wasn't so bad earlier on, but his later writings were very bad with regard to the Jews. That's true. Yeah. And so we will see tomorrow, as we look into what happens next, how Martin Luther comes to understand the righteousness of God, and that salvation is through that personal faith in Jesus Christ. You know? And out of that, then starts to flow all the other things to do with Martin and the Reformation and just the spread of the gospel and all that kind of stuff. So I'm leaving you hanging a little bit. But I don't want us to gloss over what it was like before we get to what the answer really is in Jesus. Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Okay. I was going to show you just a little video clip, and I forgot all about it, but Tim's got it there now. And we might just... It's a trailer of a film about Martin Luther, and there's a whole lot of, you know, wise people speaking on it. But just for about 5 minutes, I think, we can watch through that. And we'll pick up on some of those comments also as we go through the week.